In this issue's podcast, we're talking with Dr. Amy Romashko of Children's Hospital of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. You are the director there?
Yes, I'm the medical director.
For the urgent care. And I've been asking everybody, how did you get interested in pediatrics? And how did you get interested in urgent care pediatrics?
Yeah, I've always been interested in peds. I kind of went to med school thinking I would be a pediatrician. I've always loved children, and I was a caretaker for children in college, and it was just always been my passion to work with kids. And urgent care I kind of stumbled into. I had come back up to where my home was with my husband after he finished his residency, and I had been working in primary care for a couple years down in Chicago, and I just didn't know if it was the right fit for me with the hours and the call and the rounding in different hospitals. And I've always enjoyed the faster pace of kind of an ER setting, and but not necessarily the extreme acuity of an ER setting. So I never did a fellowship. And when I came up here, a friend of mine recommended that until I figured out kind of what I wanted to do with my life, I keep my foot in the door, at urgent care for children. And that was about 12 years ago now. So my foot is firmly planted, and it was just a really great fit for me, lifestyle-wise, the hours, the pace, the ability to do procedures, and then also the people I work with. The team is incredible, and I just quickly fell in love with the whole situation and haven't looked back.
So you moved from foot in the door to director of the whole shebang?
I've been the medical director for the last 6 years, so yes, my foot is firmly planted.
Hey, what do you find about children as patients in that situation that, you know, particularly appeals to you or presents particular problems sometimes?
Yeah, I love their honesty. I love that if they don't like you, they don't have to pretend like you. And if they're uncomfortable, they let you know. And if they're feeling better, it's quite obvious. I love that they find joy in things and the curiosity. It keeps my job fun. I just did a shift yesterday, and it's just, it reinvigorates why you're here, to be able to work with kids and their families. And, you know, they come in often in urgent care situations. They're nervous, they're scared. And to be able to have that place in their lives where you're able to kind of patch them up and make them feel better and reassure people and give good teaching and make sure that they get, you know, routed back to their medical home. It's just a good feeling to be able to build that rapport and be that support to families after hours when they need it. And of course, you know, the challenges, you know, nobody likes when kids are sick, and nobody likes the challenges of sometimes difficult parents. But I think overall our job is such a joyful one. And it's just filled with surprises and just satisfying encounters. And I just love it.
Is it a never-ending line of new children? Do children come back to the urgent care over and over, and you see some children again?
Yeah, you know, we actually have a really amazing opportunity here. We have 6 different sites across the Milwaukee area, and our volumes are ever increasing. I think we saw 36,000 kids last year in our sites alone, and about half of them are patients of the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin primary care groups. There's about 24 of those clinics now around the Milwaukee area. But then the rest are patients of other, you know, primary care doctors in the area. And then we're seeing about a 30 to 40% new patient rate, which means new patients we haven't seen in the last 3 years. So although we do definitely get our share of repeat visitors that are fairly loyal and get to know us and my staff, we also have remarkable amounts of new patients that just, for whatever reason, need the care after hours and don't want to go to the emergency room. And I think more and more, and as people are aware of high deductibles and also just, you know, not wanting to go to an ER, a busy ER with, you know, something more minor, I think urgent care has become a really great way to serve the community in times of need.
How long has Children's Hospital of Wisconsin operated urgent care centers?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've been open for over 25 years, probably close to 30. Our kind of how we're set up has changed over time. We kind of partnered with the ER initially, where we were kind of like a, you know, it's like a pod two, kind of separate from the ER, but in the same location. And then as we moved kind of off campus, it became much more apparent that we were a much better fit with the primary care world. So although we've been around for a while, our growth has really been over the last 5-6 years or so as we were adopted by the primary care kind of umbrella of Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. And I think that's just because it's, you know, rather than kind of just being kind of the filter off the ER, we're actually kind of a bridge to primary care, and we're able to kind of support those medical homes in a way that that we couldn't do when we were on campus, and when we're out in the community, we can.
So if it's been the last 5 or 6 years, that's been pretty much all during your tenure.
Yeah, we've grown a lot. But as I said, it was really kind of coincidental with when we were kind of adopted by primary care. It just is such a nice fit. And, you know, we actually were recently recognized as the first organization in the nation to get the patient-centered connected care recognition from the NCQA, the National Committee for Quality Assurance, because of our connection to primary care medical home and our support of that and our communication and our looping back. And so it just was kind of a magic kind of formula where we suddenly were able to partner so well with the primary care providers in our community as a you know, support to them as opposed to a competition for patients. So
what would you advise other operations around the country to take into consideration when they're looking at that situation and working with the pediatricians in their area who might be a little more skeptical?
Yeah, we had some skeptics, too, when we started out under their umbrella. And I think just good communication is huge. I did a lot of, you know, talking in front of groups. I did a lot of sharing our protocols, and I think you build that trust, you know, and have an open line for feedback. So when I have primary care doctors who see something that they're not sure about, that one of my providers did, or that they're confused as to why something happened, or if I hear it on my end that, you know, a parent says, well, my primary care doctor said blah, 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 I loop back with those people and communicate really clearly and how can we best help you? This is why we're doing what we're doing. And we've actually found that in doing that, our clinical care just in general for the whole primary care system has really improved because, you know, we'll find best practices in urgent care and we'll kind of be like, well, this is why we're doing this. And the primary care doctors are like, well, that's great. We should be doing that. And so it kind of has become a much more working partnership because of our communication and our openness about, well, why are you doing it that way? And why are you not doing it this way? Because I think every pediatrician, every doctor wants the best and safest care for patients. I don't think there's a doctor alive that doesn't want to do what's best for their families and patients. So I think, yeah, just open communication so that they understand our goal is really to support, you know, their patients and support the medical home. You know, when we have asthmatics that come in, especially those that we see often, we loop them back with their primary care doctor. We make sure that they go back and talk about possible controllers. And, you know, if we're at all concerned about follow-up, we'll call the primary care office and say, you know, this family has been seeing us a couple times for, you know, these asthma exacerbations. You know, why don't you reach out to them and make sure that they get hooked in? We've told them to, but, you know, just make sure. And that way we can really partner for those families. And then we build that trust with the primary care doctor that we're not trying to steal those patients too.
You mentioned doing it, that sometimes there's an it that you're doing that they learn from or an it that they're doing that you learn from. You have any other examples that people might be interested in?
Yeah, absolutely. So for instance, you know, when the AAP came out with their bronchiolitis recommendations about, you know, not going with the albuterol unless there's, you know, other risk factors or a reason that you might think that it might be helpful, you know, we kind of had this moment where we'd have families that would be frustrated with us because we wouldn't do albuterol and they'd go to the primary care doctor and they would get albuterol. And so then they would be upset that they came to us and didn't get that help. And so, you know, by going through and showing them our guidelines and explaining the evidence behind them and kind of sharing our protocols, they were able to see kind of the evidence-based medicine we were practicing and, it, you know, and then able to kind of adopt some of that in their practice as well as they talked amongst themselves and said, you know what, we really shouldn't be doing this. This is what we should really be following. So it's kind of that example in the community where we can show what we're doing and show it based on evidence and then, you know, kind of share that knowledge and kind of trickle out. You know, medicine changes slowly and habits die hard, and you know, pediatricians are busy, and it's sometimes it's hard to break habits that you've been doing for years. But when you're working with someone who's also seeing your patients, who is delivering a message of improved care, it's a little harder to ignore that in their world as well, and vice versa. You know, we can learn from them as well with the things that they're doing in their groups. So, you know, like, for instance, our guidelines, are we have bronchiolitis guidelines. We've got, you know, all sorts of different guidelines for the things we do in clinic. You know, things like, you know, alternating Tylenol and ibuprofen, which is a very common practice that has been disproven as something that is helpful for children for fever, and can sometimes really increase fever phobia in families, thinking that they have to control the fever. That's another thing that we've kind of passed through and kind of, you know, shown our evidence and explained why we're not recommending that. And then when their families come back to them and say, well, urgent care said we shouldn't be doing this anymore, it kind of becomes this incentive for them to kind of, oh, yeah, you know, you're right. That's probably not what we should be doing. And so it actually benefits care both directions as we open communication.
Earlier you mentioned, I think, 36,000 patient visits a year across six centers.
Yes.
Is it pretty much evenly divided? Do certain areas get more? Do you get different ages?
We definitely have busier clinics, you know, but for the most part, all of our sites are seeing the same amount of growth annually. I think we've been opening kind of a new site every year for the last couple of years. We'll be opening another new site in more of the south side Milwaukee, kind of Kenosha area, in the next year. And I think there's just such an increased need for families that are busy, and an awareness of not wanting to go to the ER, that I think is just a nice fit for people. But yeah, we're growing everywhere. It's really kind of impressive.
What is your relationship with the ERs? How many cases might you send in a week or a month or a year?
You know, the numbers in a year, I don't remember the exact numbers, but we do have a percentage. So about, it's under 2% our transfer rate to the ER. So it's not high numbers. We do transfer kids who need kind of full workup, evaluations, you know, rule out appendicitis, some of our traumas. It's interesting what can show up in urgent care these days as people are trying to avoid those ER copays. But yeah, we have an under 2% transfer rate, and we do have a good relationship with our ER. It's really nice. They're a level one trauma center, so they're, you know, a very good ER for peds, and it's nice to know that when you're sending your pediatric patients to the ER that they're getting excellent ER care as well. And I work closely with their medical director to kind of iron out, you know, issues with handoffs and things like that as well. We all share a medical record, an electronic medical record, which is also very helpful. So they can see our vital signs, our treatment, all that kind of thing in our medical record, as can all the primary care doctors that work for Children's. And so it's an unusual relationship in that we can give them a call and even say, you know, hey, I've got this kid. You know, what do you think? Is this something you guys would do more with? And in addition to transferring, we often share advice and kind of learn from one another that way as well. So yeah, it's really handy. And we also have, we're lucky enough to be associated with the PEDS hospital, so we also have kind of the access to all the subspecialty care as well. So if we get a complicated, you know, kidney kid or a complicated, you know, hemonc kid that comes in, we can actually call the service and talk to the resident on call or even the attending on call and get feedback on what we should be doing and what they feel would be best and safest for that patient, which I think is really, it makes our job a lot easier to provide the best possible care because we're, you know, all partnered so closely.
As you prepare the seventh center, have you learned anything from the first six? Is there going to be anything different in the staffing or the layout? There's been a lot of discussion on some of the SPUC email boards about equipment. Yeah. You know, what are you looking at as you prepare your seventh?
Yeah, you know, we have learned a lot. And as, you know, over the last, especially, you know, 5 to 10 years, we've really started standardizing our sites and kind of defining our scope of care. I think it's helpful for the community to know what our scope of care is so that they don't, you know, so the pediatricians don't send the wrong thing to the wrong place. You know, nobody wants parents to be frustrated with that. But I think, you know, the one thing we've really learned is that we need space to expand because we've been growing so quickly, and we've unfortunately not had the vision to see how fast that would happen. So we've outgrown some of our spaces rather quickly. So we want to make sure that we have the right number of exam rooms. We like to have a kind of a workspace where we can see where everyone is. We've been in clinics before where we're more of a primary care site where when someone's in a room, you have no idea where they are. And we have most of our sites now are set up in such a way that there's kind of a central workstation, and you know, we can do a lot more multitasking and teamwork when we can all kind of see where everyone is and everyone knows where everybody is. So definitely that. I think, you know, for our emergency care, we've really kind of, you know, our goal, since we have such great access to our ER and our emergency response times are usually within 5 minutes from the different centers around us to get kids to the ER, we really want to focus on what we need to do to keep the patient safe and stable before they get transported. And so we have standardized our emergency kits, and actually that is rolled out through all the primary care sites as well, which is kind of exciting at Children's, where they all have the same equipment, the same protocols, the same you know, supplies that they would need for an emergency, so that everyone's very prepared for what comes in. But yeah, I think, you know, we're really space, and then, you know, the thoughts right now, we're mostly open nights and weekends because we haven't wanted to compete with the primary care medical home. But we're starting to see that extended hours might be helpful, especially as primary care sites kind of book their clinic slots pretty early. So we don't open till 5, but often by 2 or even 1 o'clock in the afternoon, a lot of the primary care acute visits are booked. So we're kind of thinking about, you know, making sure we have space that we can. Right now we're sharing in a lot of spaces, so we can't necessarily open earlier. But in future sites, we're looking at opportunities for that, where we might be able to extend our hours a little bit and even give more access to the families that need us.
How many and what kinds of medical professionals at any given center?
Yeah, so we have a team of, let's see, how many do we have now? We're growing so fast. 28 physicians right now and 17 nurse practitioners. And so we're at least double staffed at every site, where we have at least a doctor and a nurse practitioner working side by side, if not two doctors or two doctors and a nurse practitioner. So we're either double or triple staffed everywhere. And we flex our staffing based on anticipated volumes. You know, there's certain days of the week at different sites that tend to be busiest. But we want to make sure that we have the providers and that we need. We also have at least two nurses at every site, RNs. We feel that's very important, especially in the triage abilities. As we're walk-in centers, we often get more volume than we can handle in any given hour, and having actual RNs that can help to do our triage and assessments help make sure that we're not missing emergencies and we're getting the kids moving where we need them to be. And then we also employ MAs to help with meds and assist the nurses. So at sites that are triple staffed with providers, we often will have two nurses and an MA. We tend to try to match the nursing / MA staff with our provider staff so that there's a good support on both sides. And then we also have a registration staff at the front desk that then helps out when they need to, but mostly is doing the registration of all of our patients and on the front end.
Okay. As the Society for Pediatric Urgent Care moves forward, what kinds of interests do you have in the organization, and what should they be focusing on?
Yeah, I think I'm so excited to have the Society for Pediatric Urgent Care. When I first heard about it, it was just a couple years into my medical directorship, and it was just so refreshing to have a group of people that were focused on the same issues and problems and opportunities that we were. And I think, you know, offering that community of like-minded professionals to share ideas and support the growth and development of our field is so important and exciting. And I think, especially as we're moving forward with all of our quality improvement projects and, you know, that kind of thing, I think a place to kind of have some standards and some benchmarks offered to the groups, and mostly just kind of a support and an idea kind of factory is such an exciting thing about having a group like the Society for Pediatric Urgent Care.